This episode is brought to you in part by Swim. Here's the thing about wishlist apps. Most of them just sit there. A customer saves a product, and then nothing happens. Swim actually activates that data. When someone wishlists a product, you could trigger price drop or back-in-stock alerts and feed that intent directly into Klaviyo or your CRM. You're not guessing what people want, because they've told you. Plus, customers can share wishlists for gifts, and your team can view them to offer personalized service online or in-store. And unlike cart abandonment, wishlist data is permission-based. These are people raising their hand saying, "Hey, I want this, just not right now." Swim's been around for over a decade. It powers 45,000 stores and installs in about 5 minutes. You could try it for free today at getswim.com/Kurt. That's getswym.com/Kurt. Oh, my friends, it is almost that time. It is soon to be Black Friday, and with that comes a whole lot of shipping headaches, right? Fulfillment and delivery is the name of the game here. We're competing against Amazon, and they're, you know, mostly two-day delivery. I've got questions about it, and so I need someone who has shipped many packages. We're joined today by Casey Armstrong, CMO of ShipBob, in his third appearance on this show, right, to discuss surviving peak 2026 shipping season. And, you know, a lot has changed since in the last 5 years around shipping costs, et cetera. And I want to dig deep on this. Casey, welcome to the show. You still kicking it at ShipBob? How long have you been doing that?
Yeah, Kurt, great to see you. Glad to be back on here and having me for the third time. So I recently hit the 8-year mark over at ShipBob. So we're 12 years in, and I've been here for 8, and it's been an amazing ride. Shipped to hundreds of millions of orders, as you mentioned, well over a billion units. So we've seen quite a bit.
Billion units. I like that number, because as a human, it really is not possible to conceive of it. Like, I cannot visualize a billion. It's just a huge number. So last time you were here, it's 5 years ago, approximately December 2021.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, been a long time. Shipageddon was the villain then. Fun word to say, even more difficult to spell. What's the villain in 2026? The shipping villain.
Yeah, that's a great question, because I was actually talking about that with somebody in different words yesterday, because we've had just all of these, you know, macro curveballs and headwinds. I mean, we don't need to talk about what was happening in 2020 and 2021, really. But I know you remember well, like the iOS changes and the Apple Facebook war, which I think a lot of people forget about, but that really impacted brands, especially when there was that whole, you know, digitally native brand phase, and D2C is like the only channel push. And then, of course, there's been tariffs and de minimis changes last year, which was so impactful. Obviously, there's the war going on, which is a very serious thing, but I don't think it's really impacting brands anywhere close to how it has in the past. And so part of me wonders, like, is there even a boogeyman this year, or like an enemy for people to really like rally the troops and go against? I think there's actually, obviously, there's something that's taken the world by storm, and that's artificial intelligence and AI. I think that can be a massive benefit for a lot of brands. I think a lot of founders and individuals are balancing the costs of AI, and not just like from a monetary perspective, but also just from like a mind space and like a time perspective, is like, what is adding value versus what is noise? Right. We've seen just some amazing use cases in AI and have invested heavily there, not just in the way we execute and run our business, but in the things that we've rolled out, which I'm sure we'll get to soon. But overall, I think unlike other years, there isn't like a clear boogeyman. It's more just keeping the team, you know, focused, because along with AI, there's also, I think, been this massive like channel boom or channel proliferation. And so again, it's like, how do we keep the team focused on the right things, especially when peak season is here, and then maybe reopen the playbook again, how we go about executing our business and, you know, starting in early 2027.
What's this channel boom?
So, yeah, I'd love your take here actually as well. But it seems, you know, really heading up to, I don't know, 2019, 2020, you know, in quite a few years before that, so many of these businesses, they were kind of building their businesses in kind of three different ways. Of course, there was some crossover, but it really seemed like they were three distinct paths. One was you were building it, let's say, a Shopify store and using Meta ads. The other path was I sell on Amazon. And the other path was I sell in physical retail. And again, obviously there was some overlap, but we didn't really see a ton. I still remember going to an event. It was like in 2017 or 18. I think it was, who was running that event? It was one of the like the big Amazon like ad tech players at the time. And I remember talking to so many different brands there, and they were Amazon sellers. And I'd ask them about Shopify, I'd ask them about BigCommerce, I'd ask them about the other platforms, and they just kind of looked at me blankly, and they're like, who? And they were just so focused on Amazon. Obviously today that would never happen, because the world shifted a bunch. And so all of these brands now, they're looking at how can they, you know, obviously build up their own store and leverage things like subscription to create like this very consistent business if it fits their business model. But they're looking into Amazon earlier. They're getting approached by retailers earlier. And there's a lot of opportunity in retail that just did not exist in years past. And then also what's been exciting is there are a lot of digital channels beyond just selling direct through your website as well. And so obviously TikTok Shop has been a huge boost to many brands. And I think some brands are finding the consistency there versus just like the one-off wonders. Whatnot has, for the right brands, has just really increased. We've seen some of our customers do exceptionally well on Whatnot. And then there's other channels like Fair from like a wholesale perspective, which continues to pick up momentum and has been such a, you know, they've been executing so impressively. And so now there's just so many of these different channels. And so again, with peak here, it's like, okay, well, how can we maximize our returns on everything we've done leading up to the year and the inventory that we have on hand? But, you know, not just this year, but next year as well, is how can they continue to expand their channel mix?
And okay, great data to have. You brought up last year, looking at some ShipBob stats, it sounds like international growth really took off for you, is what you saw. Mm-hmm. Is this, you know, are these tariff refugees? Like it, you know, was this always going to happen just because e-com is growing in those places, or because we're shifting demand?
I think it's a combination of the tariff and de minimis impact. And so these brands were looking to, they'd been probably looking around for a while, but I think that was like the tipping point or the external forcing mechanism for them to take the plunge and go global. Again, whether that's them going from the US up into Canada, whether then that's them jumping across the pond to the UK or the EU, maybe them going all the way to Australia, flipping the switch in shipping cross border and figuring out, you know, what does their ad mix look like there. And so again, I think it was a lot of brands were ready for it. And then also I saw some parallels, I think, in the software as a service or the SaaS space, probably, you know, leading up to the late teens, you know, the late 2010s, where there became so much education in the space. And there had been people that have been around and done a lot of like the hard things and discovered like really how to execute that well. And so I think that there's just been a lot of, you know, e-commerce was still in such a kind of its infancy in the, you know, call it 2019, 2020 era. People have been, you know, just able to learn a lot about what works and what doesn't work. Solutions like us at ShipBob are enabling that. There's a lot of cross-border solutions and people that are helping people figure out how to get things like VAT set up or the compliance needed to sell certain goods globally. And so I think it was just this overall mix of just being very opportune for a lot of brands. But yes, I think the tariff and de minimis changes were really the forcing mechanism to push a lot of people forward.
Yeah, and we've been what, just over a year since the de minimis died.
I mean, and that was on the global scale. I mean, changes with China were happening even before that. And it was really, I think it was December, not November, but like December of 2024, I had to think what year we're in, 2024, when there was like the MX changes down in Mexico. that really started causing a lot of the rumbling and changes, especially in the apparel with apparel brands, because that changed a lot of like the regulation with textiles and where they were manufactured and what was and wasn't manufactured in Mexico. And so that caused a huge ripple with these, let's call it de minimis or Section 321 brands. And then, you know, the tariff started in Q1 of last year, and it's, I'd say fortunately calmed down a bit, or at least provide some stability. And then there's like the tariff refund impact for right. those that qualify, which could be a tailwind for a lot of brands, whether they're paying off their debt or can funnel that back into ads or inventory. But yeah, it's that was definitely a wild ride.
All right. So your data covers thousands of brands here. What's the healthiest category right now? Or like, do you have ideas like, well, this category's slowing down, this one's taking off? Can we break it down by vertical?
Well, so we don't have full access to like, you know, their P&L and what that looks like. So I don't know if I'd be the best person to answer that. I will say these brands, again, where I touched on this slightly earlier, but the brands where an element of subscription can be brought into the business to provide the consistency. We've seen some, we fortunately work with and seen some extremely impressive brands that have built these massive businesses that are very capital efficient by taking advantage of subscriptions the right way. And that's another area where, again, I think people have learned a lot from software as a service or SaaS, and are layering those elements into e-commerce, where a lot of brands often think of, and I'm sure you guys do with your agencies, you know, you're always thinking of like ROI or how can we be, you know, cash flow positive on the first order, but there's also retention. And so it's interesting to see what a lot of these brands are doing that have subscription to drive retention. Again, whether that's including freebies or what are the perks as you continue to stay on, but those that have really nailed retention and can really crush that LTV, they're just seeing, again, they're just building these massive direct-to-consumer brands with subscription.
Now, all right, I don't doubt the power of subscription, but the phrase that stood out to me was doing subscription the right way. Do we know off the top of our head the wrong way?
Let's see, the wrong way. There's a lot of people that will offer, where we've seen customers struggle there is offering discounts early if you subscribe and there's no real reason to come back, and it's truly not a subscription business. And so that way people are just getting these discounts, waiting to get the initial order. And usually they'll give like an outsized discount for that first subscription order because they are running the LTV math, lifetime value, or the LTV math. And then the people churn. Again, you see this a lot with software as well, but with these brands, it's like, okay, well, if I'm getting 20, 30, 40% off for that first order, that's great. I'll just order it and then cancel right away. And then there's also really nothing. The subscription solutions continue to get, you know, stronger and handle more complex use cases. I've been very impressed with what Recharge has been able to continue to roll out. And they obviously made a pretty big acquisition with Skio earlier this year. But, you know, it's a lot of people can skirt around these. If they do actually want to order again in the future, they can, and the brands don't make changes to their first order, they can often skirt around it and get another massive discount as well.
Support for this episode comes from Zipify, makers of ShopRank. Consider this. AI may be hiding your Shopify store, and you wouldn't even know it. Today, more than 800 people use large language models like ChatGPT and Gemini to shop for their products. And those AI engines are deciding who to recommend. The question is whether they're picking you or your competitor. The trouble that most Shopify stores have errors they may not be aware of. Missing alt text, weak descriptions, JSON schema that is simply wrong. AI sees those errors and moves on without a second thought. And there goes the sale. Now you can do something about it. ShopRank checks your product catalog against 17 critical factors that can keep you from appearing in AI search. But unlike other audit tools, which only tell you what's broken, ShopRank fixes it for you automatically. No tech skills required. ShopRank gives you your store's AI visibility score in under 60 seconds and then helps you improve it for free. You could see your AI score right now by visiting Zipify.com/AI. That's Zipify.com/AI. Do take a moment to do this today before AI gives away any more of your sales. Yeah, that's always the struggle. It's like, the, you know, the people willing to put in the effort to game your discount. Like, okay. Yeah, I have mixed feelings about it.
Yeah. What do you see there on the subscription side?
Subscriptions are it's a tough sell. I mean, fundamentally, the person subscribing realizes this is now a recurring cost in my life. And their pushback is always going to be like, well, how do I get the timing right? And so I think, you know, a subscription, it is an easy thing to bolt on. It is a difficult thing to do really well. And you could base that on, you know, what is the take rate on my subscription? And then what is my churn rate? And, you know, a lot of times, or how often do they stay in the subscription? You know, and mm-hmm. a lot of times it's like by month four, they're gone. Yeah. So like, well, if they were there for 3 months, was that worth it on the discount, or should I have just sold it to them one time at the full price up front to begin with?
Yeah, I think that's interesting. With there's companies like Rise Coffee, and so coffee is something that people often have this daily habit of, and so it lends itself well to a subscription business. And they've done such a good job of like their funnel. It's really tough to check out without going through the subscription flow. And so that's a risk that they're taking, that they will lose some people that find that friction as a negative. But if they're taking a huge bet on the quality and stickiness of the product, and they are pulling you through that, and then thinking of other levers to keep you in, again, that's a way to drive a huge business. And then I think on the other end, there's companies like Momentous, the supplement company, where if you are providing this quality product and people do find themselves just naturally coming back, they did not go through the subscription flow, but they continue to see, oh, I actually can, I'm spending X amount on the products every month or every other month. And I can get this, call it 10 to 20% discount if I just do it through the subscription flow. That way they're building up this like brand trust in advance. And again, I think that's how you get even like the most long-term customers. But at the end of the day, you obviously still need to deliver an extremely quality product.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, you're always going to have a hard time with a crappy product, right?
Yeah.
It's going to make life hard. We've got Black Friday right around the corner. Like October will be here before I know it. Is there anything from your perspective, from the fulfillment side, from the warehouse side, that I should be doing to prepare for Black Friday?
Yeah, I'd say fortunately here, my advice is the same pretty much regardless of what year it is. I mean, this is what we call inbound peak. And so, of course, we all know peak season or Black Friday, Cyber Monday, you know, is when you make a lot of your revenue from the sales you make, inventory going outbound. But for us, this is inbound peak. And so this starts and this bleeds up pretty close all the way to you know, to the holiday selling, where both for direct to consumer and for B2B, we see such a massive influx in inventory coming into our network. And so know that your fulfillment partner, while you might say, oh, this is not your busy time, because your busy time is the holidays when a bunch of stuff is shipping outbound, this is when they're maybe even busier, because so much inventory is coming inbound. And receiving goods is often more complex than I think shipping goods, as long as your fulfillment partner does it the right way, because you're trying to make sure that the product count is correct, that the SKUs that were sent in, let's say the color mix is correct. If you are shipping things like supplements or coffee, that the lot tracking or the expiration dates are correct. There's so much that needs to be done from an inbound standpoint. For us, we have our inventory placement program. And so we're always like load balancing on behalf of our customers. And so that's like a huge way to get ahead of, you know, Black Friday, Cyber Monday, because you can, you know, ship faster, ship more inexpensively, but you can also push out your sales date closer and closer to Christmas to continue to extend those sales and drive some extra revenue. But I think really, again, since you asked on the fulfillment side, whatever you can do to set up your partners for success, from things like barcoding to just clean inbound to just really scheduling and giving them a heads up of what's coming and when, that will really set you up for success. Because the last thing you want to be doing is scrambling and asking for inventory counts and where inventory is when it's your time to, you know, really be going full throttle on marketing.
And you mentioned inventory placement, like total number of inventory placement locations. If yep. I have a partner, a 3PL, often I could distribute my inventory across the country. That sounds interesting. Yeah, tell me a little bit about the logic with inventory placement. Like, how many locations does a typical brand need to to be optimal here?
Again, so we have whenever brands are starting to work with us, we run them through really our time in transit and inventory placement like algorithms, just so that they can see like what should that mix look like. Because sometimes the let's call it node count or the facility count kind of intimidates them a bit, even if we are managing the distribution on their behalf. And so it's really unique for the different brands. And so that's why they should come through and run it through to get like an assessment of what's right for their business. And then as they work with us, there's actually in their analytics sections from an inventory standpoint in ShipBob, you can actually start to see what is the optimal mix, and you can start toggling if you want to add additional nodes. But for, let's just say, an apparel brand that's volume is not exceptionally high, sometimes a single node is correct. If you're shipping, call it 5,000 units a month, and you've got 2,000 plus SKUs, for example, splitting that, unless you have a couple of hero products, splitting that in multiple nodes probably does not make sense, because then you're going to be doing a lot of split shipments, meaning you might have to ship, you know, the black shirt and the blue shirt from two separate spots, and that's going to completely crush your margins, because you're going to have to pay for, you know, two different fulfillment packaging and shipping labels. But for, you know, a lot of brands, let's say the health, wellness, beauty space, food and bev, that are often lower catalog, lower SKU count catalogs, getting into three or four nodes, sometimes five nodes can make a lot of sense, massively improve the customer experience and drive down the costs. And then in the food and bev space, we work with a lot of ready to drink brands, which for a lot of time, you know, people, myself included, were questioning, like, can that actually even be a strong business direct to consumer? Because it really is expensive to ship heavy goods. And
well, big especially and like goods. Glass bottles. Oh, man.
Yeah, glass bottles. We ship actually a lot of glass bottles. And then you have to take, of course, fragile into consideration. But there, you know, once you start getting into like four or five nodes, you can just greatly reduce your fulfillment costs, because now you're shipping everything what we call short zone or zone, you know, call it 1 to 4 max. And there's really two levers to decrease what it costs for you to ship a good. One is reduce the size or the weight of the good, which is often not a lever that brands have. We can actually get into ways that brands have done that. But that's often not something you can do. Like, a glass bottle filled with liquid is going to always weigh a certain amount. And the other is reducing the zone. And so again, the shipping rate cards are essentially driven by weight or dimensional weight and then shipping zone. And so the shorter distance that you can ship that to your end consumer is probably the biggest lever you have to reduce your costs.
I was not prepared for that level of detail. Like, you, that one, you're like, absolutely 100%, I know this. And I thought the answer was just going to be like 3 to 5. Moving on. Like, okay. Yeah.
We get that question a lot.
Yeah. Well, you're right. That makes sense.
That's where it's our turn to shine. I mean, we pride ourselves in fulfillment and not trying to go in a bunch of other directions. And so, yeah, we get that question a lot.
It's just fun when you ask a question and realize like what you've walked into. Yeah. Like, oh wow! You're like, this is where they really know their stuff. Oh my gosh. I want to shift gears to, you know, AI. What else? It's 2026. That's all we talk about, AI. I don't want to do anything outside of my terminal. I just want to live in the command prompt with my AI agent. You know, feel very productive bossing it around. To do that, all the services I need have to give me a way for my AI to control it. You've done that with an MCP server, which for, you know, in a business context, like fulfillment inventory, makes a lot of sense. Talk to me about the use cases there. Like, how are people, once I can attach ShipBob to my AI, what am I doing with that?
Yeah, so I'll cover two things and I'll answer that directly. It's been fascinating to see how people want to use our AI layer or the MCP. And so one is we did build, one of our big bets was open protocol versus like the walled garden, but we also built our own AI agent that we call Bobby that lives in Shipbob. That is extremely powerful, and we are building so much on top of that, and we're building so much internally on top of that from like, so at Shipbob, I'll get back to that in a sec. There's essentially like the merchant application, which a lot of people just think of what is Shipbob. That's like your dashboard. That's what you log into every day. That's the top of the stack, let's call it. At the bottom, there's our warehouse management system, or WMS, that powers all of our facilities. We've got 70 plus around the world. They all use our WMS. In between, it's really our decision engine, which is like the brains of it all. And then on top of everything would be our API and our MCP. So you don't need to, not everybody needs to follow all of that. But the point is like the owning that entire stack is what's allowed us to do not just read, but also write across everything at the AI layer, which is the important part that we'll get into. Again, it can't just be read. It can't just be this pretty dashboard. You got to be able to write. You got to be able to take action, or else like, are you really saving time, or you're really adding value? With Bobby, the agent, there's so many interesting things that people do. And again, we're continuing to invest heavily into like what that means and like what we do internally around that, such as, I don't know, things like claims or where is my order type stuff that comes up all the time. But the open protocol thing has been fascinating. And so, you know, we were pushing heavily on it earlier. We were proud to be the first Claude verified app over on the fulfillment side. But the usage and where we're seeing requests coming from, you know, from Claude to OpenAI to Cursor to LangChain to this like long tail of like these homegrown clients, it's pretty fascinating to see how people are using this and just using it all over the place. And so I think that's where these businesses, again, not just in the fulfillment space, but in general, that really go with like the open protocol method, especially as people are starting to question like their costs on Claude, right, or OpenAI, and as those tokens get more expensive, and they might want to test other models or other agents. It's important, I think, to be able to plug into the gamut, or at least allow people to pull from you in multiple different ways.
No, I greatly appreciate that approach. You know, because it fits the way a lot of us, especially developers, want to work. Is like, I define my environment, and then I get to choose which tools can connect to that.
Yes,
and in the case of the LLM, and increasingly, it turns out the LLMs are really, they're going to be a commodity. You know, I really don't care. Like, I have no, there's no difference between Claude, Grok, and ChatGPT, Sol. In, you know, when I'm just like, I just need something to do to execute these instructions. So just give me the one that works, right? And isn't going to cost a fortune. So yeah, like the lack of loyalty there is kind of interesting, which is where, you know, it's nice to take the open approach, because then you don't have to worry about like, what's the hot model? What do we have to build for which marketplace? Though you still did get the official plugin. That's not easy either.
No. And I mean, Claude is definitely one of the outsized winners. That's running away with the market along with OpenAI and Grok, as you mentioned. And so, yeah, getting in there was important for us because so many of our customers were using it. That was a lot of the feedback we got. Also, brands want to be able to tie in so many different sources into, you know, Claude alone, which is what I think you were alluding to, where it can't just be, again, with our agent, that's great because it's Shipbob data to the extreme, and also whatever you have flowing into that. But, you know, if you're running everything into Claude and you want to pull from Shopify and you want to pull from Klaviyo and you want to pull from NetSuite or QuickBooks or, you know, some homegrown stuff that you've built as well, you can aggregate that all into one place and really build whatever you want. And it's also fascinating to see what Claude and others continue to roll out. And so I think it's called Claude Connect, that they rolled out recently. I don't know if you've used it at all, but it plugs into Slack and essentially allows you to, you know, utilize Slack as your agent and as your colleague. And so what you can do, actually, this is one of the cooler use cases I've seen from our customers is, So again, we talked about inbound inventory earlier, which is what so many brands are thinking about right now. How do I get my inventory from my manufacturer to my fulfillment center to stack up both D2C and B2B for the holidays? Well, you need to submit like a purchase order or some information. In our world, it's called a warehouse receiving order or WRO to your fulfillment center so they actually know what they should receive. And so for some brands, you know, they might be small catalog and they're not shipping a lot. And so that count might be pretty basic. But, you know, for some of the brands we work with, they've got thousands, if not over 10,000 SKUs. Some of them are sending us, you know, hundreds of thousands of units at a time. Some when they're moving over, it's in the millions. But anyways, let's just say hundreds of thousands of units. To submit that as a PO is rather cumbersome. And if you're typing things in, obviously that can get a bit complex and they might be coming on multiple containers at multiple times. And so where we've seen some of our customers really leverage it is they can just upload PDFs or screenshots into Slack and just say, create a WRO in ShipBob, essentially. They push the send button. It pushes it, loads it all up into ShipBob. Now the WROs or the inbound orders are now it's registered into ShipBob, and then ShipBob will push back up into Slack all of the WROs that they need to give their manufacturer within, you know, call it 30 seconds. And so something that might have taken a brand 5 minutes at the lower end to, you know, over 30 minutes at the higher end or even longer if they had an extremely complex, you know, inbound order can just be done in a couple minutes. And when brands are sending an inventory multiple times a week or multiple times a month, you know, those numbers add up real fast.
Wrong address, wrong size, add one more. The same three emails every single day, and every one is a ticket your team handles by hand. Read it, verify it, fix it in Shopify, email the customer back. Do that a few hundred times a month, and you're paying salaries to be a manual order editing tool. Our sponsor, Cleverific, has been thinking about this for years. They've run order editing on Shopify since before it was a category. Now your shoppers can fix their own orders right on the order status page. Address, size, quantity, add-ons. No ticket, no back and forth, and everything writes straight back through Shopify. And here's what's new. Order upsells that build themselves. Cleverific reads your store's order history, generates post-purchase offers based on what your customers actually buy, and it works with the flows you already run. This summer, they'll even do the whole thing for you. Mention the unofficial Shopify podcast, and Cleverific will handle the complete setup, order editing, post-purchase upsells, all of it done for you, plus a $500 upsell credit to get you started. So stop editing orders for your customers. Let them do it themselves, and let it pay for itself. Cleverific order editing on the Shopify App Store. Some of that, like, really detailed, time-consuming, hands-on data entry work. Oh, man, that's the stuff an AI agent's not going to complain about. It's an excellent use case to be able to get that stuff off a person's plate. You know, and you still have a human in the loop that checks it because AI does goofy things from time to time. But for the most part, it's just a great time savings, even if I do have to occasionally correct it.
Yes, 100%.
All right. Other new as a ShipBob, the SaaS service has another feature I wanted to ask you about. I'm familiar with Shopify's Shop Promise. You launched ShipBob Promise delivery dates at checkout. That's like, well, the Shop Promise one appears on the PDP, right? Versus ShipBob, this is in checkout.
They both can appear at the PDP and checkout.
Okay. So tell me about ShipBob Promise.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, we know that one of the biggest levers that brands have is the trust at the PDP and the trust at the checkout level that your product will get delivered there, not just quickly, but, you know, on a certain date. And our chief supply chain officer, Melissa Nick, she's been here for quite a few years now. She helped run North America fulfillment for Amazon for quite a while. And so she saw firsthand the power of, you know, that estimated delivery date to the end consumer and the trust that builds. Obviously, Amazon has done that better than anybody and has really set the standard there. And so, you know, just seeing the value to the sellers from like a conversion rate standpoint and the trust that it builds with the end consumer, we've always known that was, you know, a North Star and something that we needed to deliver to all of our customers, big and small. And so, yeah, we've rolled that out, and again, it's like to be able to provide that level of trust to the brands and the end consumers has been pretty amazing to see. And it's something that we'll continue to invest in heavily for sure.
Okay, switching gears to blast from the past. You were involved with a e-com business, Watchmaster, right?
Yes.
Watchmaster. And you had one of your successes, because it was a successful business, was arbitrage play, where you used a crawler and you would undercut Google prices. So you always had the lowest prices at Google Shopping. Do you think that would still work today?
It depends how your competitors advertise. And so just to, I guess, get people up to speed. So we didn't have our own watches. We would sell popular watches from the major watch brands like Rolex, Breitling, TAG Heuer, Omega, and others. And so you knew that there was like very specific SKUs. So for example, the Rolex, like the most popular. So if you look at like the kind of the 80-20 rules, 80% of the sales came from Rolex, and then 20% of the sales came from everybody else. Honestly, it was more like 90-10, but let's just call it 80-20. And so Rolex basically drove all the sales. Within Rolex, like let's call it the 80-20, they were almost all Submariner. It wasn't as high as 80%, but Submariner was by far the most popular. That's what you see Sean Connery wearing in James Bond. And it's
the dive watch.
The dive watch. And so what we knew is we could see who were our major competitors and then associate that specific SKU with what they were advertising out from like a Google perspective. And so we would crawl that and then we'd do math based off of like what we acquired the watch for, what our target margin was. And then we'd always round down to like the nearest 5 or 0 so that we were slightly underneath. Because then at the end of the day, as long as we have the trust of the consumer, we're still selling what is relatively a commodity compared to the others, because it's still, if it's a brand new, Rolex Submariner, it's still the same watch. And so again, we always want to undercut from that perspective. And so there, I think that there are brands that can find competitors. Like I'm wearing True Classic right now. You know, they've been a great customer for us. They face intense pressure from others. They might say, hey, maybe Nike or Vuori aren't competitors of ours, but like, who are their competitors? And so people are searching for black t-shirts or, I don't know, blue Henleys. Like, there are more one-to-one competitors. I think these D2C brands are trying to create more of a brand to separate, so it's not just a like a pricing war, but it is something to look at. And I think, you know, with the tools that we built internally and the scrapers we had to build at Watchmaster, what you can do now with AI, especially as a non-technical person, like, is pretty fascinating. And so I think a combination of competitive intelligence from a pricing perspective, and also like where and how to price, and also where and how to like put your free shipping discounts, you know, based off of like a lot more data. I think what the brands can do today is much different than what we were doing back in whatever that was, like, you know, 2015.
I'm glad I asked. Yeah, I found it researching you and thought it was such an interesting tactic. And I'm like, you know, and with AI right away, I was like, oh, someone could readily build this again. When you did it, it would have been a lot harder.
Yeah, it was a lot harder, but and especially if you think of like where are you driving your sales? And for us, a lot of it was on Google Shopping. And if you think about like, what's the job of an ad, it's to get the click. And then of course, what's the job of the PDP is to get them to check out, or at least move the product to the cart. And so if you think of just like these staggered steps, if you're doing a bunch of like Facebook ads, for example, or TikTok ads, will that be beneficial? Maybe not. But things like Google Shopping and other spots where people are seeing like multiple options, you know, brands should 100% be trying to do stuff like that.
My final question here, I'm going to take a swing for the fences. ShipBob IPO, rumor?
Whether that is or isn't, like, we can't comment on those things. I mean, our job is to build a really big, sustainable, profitable business that supports our customers. And that's what will allow us to continue to grow a lot. And we've been fortunate to do that so far. So, you know, we'll continue pushing on that.
That sounds good to me. All right. At what volume does it just flat out does not make sense to be picking and packing your own orders?
That's probably the question I get the most, along with the placement question. When you start to see the time that you spend doing the fulfillment impacting what is like your true differentiator as a founder or founding team, that's when you need to start, I think, looking for a fulfillment partner. And so very few founders or founding teams is like operations or supply chain, like their 10x differentiator. It's usually product development or understanding this like key gap in the market, or maybe it's marketing. There's a handful that you often see bubble up. Again, it's very, very seldomly supply chain. And so once you start seeing, hey, picking and packing these goods is taking me away from talking to customers, or, you know, really maxing out my landing pages or my ad sets, you should be looking elsewhere. I got to spend some time with Tyler McCann, who's the CEO of Taste Salud, last week. And we were actually talking about something similar. It's like, because they've been with us essentially from day one. And I was like, how'd you even come across us? And so his co-founder has had a really big YouTube following and promoted their product. And on day one, they basically sold out of everything they had, which was like 500 units. And so they had, let's just call it 500 orders. He's like, oh, we thought that would take us a couple orders to pick, pack, ship those out. He's like, it took us like 4 days and we hated every second of it. And Tyler also knows supply chain exceptionally well. And so he's like, immediately we're like, we need to find somebody that can just do this for us so we can go on doing what we do best. And so I think once you start seeing, you know, pick pack distracting you from, you know, your superpower, you should definitely be looking for a partner.
All right. Final question, Casey Armstrong, where do we find more information about you and ShipBob?
Yeah. ShipBob.com. We actually rolled out, our podcast recently. So unpacked.com, or unpackedpod.com. And yeah, I mean, if you're, The time crunch is here. And so if you're looking for a new partner for Black Friday, Cyber Monday, reach out. You know, we don't have any blackout dates. We're always bringing on new brands, but I would highly suggest looking to move over sooner than not. And yeah, reach out anytime.
Casey Armstrong, ShipBob, thank you so much.
Kurt, thank you.
Hey, before you go, I was hoping you would check out our new app, Promo Party Pro. It is what I want to be the single best, easiest way to run a free gift with purchase promo on Shopify. We just put it live in the App Store. We've got less than 50 users. We want your feedback. So if you need to run a free gift with purchase promo in the near future, install it, try it. There's a live chat. I check that all the time. And so if you have any issues at all, you know, or any suggestions on how we can make it even easier to use, let us know. We're happy to help. If you want to try it, search Promo Party in the App Store. Promo Party Pro is the app. Give it a shot. It's got a free trial. Thanks.